Hayden, would you like to reserve any time for rebuttal?
Yeah, sure. 5 minutes?
Yes, sir. You may begin whenever you're ready.
Mr. Hayden, before you begin, I don't want you to do it now, but during the appellee's argument, you cited a number of pages where you said that the issue was preserved. And I've read each one of those pages in the appendix, and I don't see that you preserved those issues. I might have missed it, so I would ask that during the appellee's argument, you review those pages and show me exactly where you preserved the issues.
I will double check.
Right, thank you.
Thank you. This case was a termination of parental rights case. Ms. Clarissa Gregory had her parental rights terminated, also had a foster care plan goal changed from return to parent to adoption. One peculiarity about the case was that the termination of parental rights was sought under 16.1-283B on pages 32 to 35 of the appendix, yet the termination order was entered under 283C2. I'm not sure how that occurred, but in any event, that was a peculiarity of this case. In any event, we have maintained that the criteria for termination of parental rights was not met by clear and convincing evidence in this case. The Department of Social Services had provided reasonable and appropriate service efforts of social, medical, mental health, or other rehabilitative agencies to the end of returning the children to their parent. In this case, there was an acknowledgement that there were no services provided to Ms. Gregory after July of 2015, and between July of 2015 and February of 2016. The only services they said that were provided was she was afforded visitation, weekly visitation through Together Lives Change. And every weekend, every week, she would show up for those appointments to meet with her child. But that was the only service that was testified to by Ms. Bowie as services being provided by Ms. Afforded to Ms. Gregory. The city attorney's brief says, well, the juvenile court entered an order in July 2015 changing the goal from return to parent to adoption. But that was appealed. And once it's appealed, I believe that the existing goal remains in effect. It's as if the proceeding in the juvenile court never occurred. There still awaits a de novo hearing in the circuit court that did not occur until March 2016. And the services...
Wasn't there testimony at the circuit court hearing that following the February 2016 termination, the department was still following up on substance abuse, domestic violence, and any of the referrals they had received on behalf of the parenting capacity evaluation? That would have been testimony by Ms. Bowie at Appendix 163. Didn't she say that they were still following up on those?
She says that she made two visits to the home of Ms. Gregory in March of 2016, and that's what she testified to. And if, I guess that's what she means by it, but she acknowledged, Ms. Bowie acknowledged when she testified on page 173, she acknowledged that, the former social worker assigned to the case, Brenda Thomas, stopped providing services to Clarissa Gregory in July 2015. And Ms. Bowie acknowledged she did not start providing services until February 2016. ask what services had been provided between July 2015 and February 2016. Ms. Bowie said at page 173, well, I know there was supervised visitation allowed through Together Lives Change, and that's all that she testified to in that time period.
Well, didn't she testify on page 163 to 164 that they were following up on substance abuse, domestic violence, and any of the referrals?
And apparently what that means is she went out to the home to visit, but the evidence was that she, in fact, was participating in substance abuse treatment, was participating in the mental health counseling. Ms. Bowie acknowledged that Ms. Gregory had reported to her she was going to Alpha counselors and had a mental health support worker. Ms. Bowie acknowledged that she didn't have any information about what services were provided to Ms. Gregory besides visitation through Together Lives Change. She said that at page 174. And she said, to excuse us, she said, well, I wasn't the worker on the case. We were still continuing services with Together Lives Change, but I wasn't the worker. She says the person who was the worker between July of 2015 and February 2016 was a Jamie Lamont. And she says on page 173, I don't have any record of what Ms. Lamont did. So she says, I just don't know. And she said, Ms. Lamont's here today to testify. She says at page 174, yet for some reason, Ms. Lamont was not called to the stand to testify. So we have to presume that there were no services provided by Ms. Lamont.
We do know that your client was involved in the Parkers in Recovery for her alcohol abuse, but she was terminated from that program because she continued to use alcohol. Isn't that right?
It is correct that she had been, and apparently, I think it would have been in approximately May of 2015. There was this period of between March through May of 2015 where she had some issues there with either testing positive on alcohol use, or I think she had picked up two charges of possession of marijuana in that period, pretty narrow time period, March through May of 2015. But the evidence was that I think she was continuing to really, by all accounts, was very cooperative with social services and as far as the things they were asking her to do, she participated. The two main hang-ups that she had was she never managed to achieve some permanent housing. It was always somewhat of a being up in the air, a moving every 30 days or so to some new residence. They cited that she didn't have employment, but well, she had employment, but then that ended after a while, but she had disability coming in.
She was on federal disability.
Yeah, she was qualified for mental health disability, and so that would seem to excuse that requirement. So I didn't understand that they were making an issue of that.
Let's not forget she was unable to correct her drug problem.
Well,
as of almost a week before the hearing,
that she had not in the May of 2000. The charges she picked up was March through May, I believe, of 2015. But then apparently they stopped affording services after that date. I would submit that they should have continued to offer drug treatment service or sought a different program. Sometimes people do fall off the wagon, but you don't just say, all right, you've had your chance, that we're done with you. You recognize that with disabilities, you warn persons, you tell them you need to start up again and get back on the wagon. And
is it accurate that at trial she conceded that she was unable to take custody of her children and asked that custody be vested with the father?
She acknowledged that as of the date,
if he could get his drug problem under control.
Right. And she did acknowledge as of the day of the hearing, she was not in a position. She was living in a rooming house.
So what was the trial court to do with a situation like that when at trial for termination of parental rights, they're faced with a parent who, after that much time says that they're still unable to care for the children.
Well, she said that even with the situation of her still not having a permanent housing at this point, she just moved out because she had, for very good reasons, had concerns about there was this. She had been with Mr. Hill, and apparently he was had been abusive, and she felt that he was also engaging in some drug activity that would be constitute a temptation to her. So she moved out. That happened about a week or two before the hearing. She did the right thing. She was trying to refrain from the temptation of being in a drug environment, knowing that that wasn't appropriate. But she testified that notwithstanding the fact that she presently was not in a position to take custody of the kids, she nevertheless maintained it's not in the best interest of those two children to terminate the relationship with their
parents. Based on that fact, what would the trial judge have done to put the children back in foster care and let them languish there until the mother got her act together? Isn't there a point where we have to say enough's enough and let the children move on with their lives?
Well, that's certainly true, but before we can say that enough has occurred, it has to be shown by clear and convincing evidence that reasonable efforts were made to correct the situation that was preventing the return of the children to the mother. And no reasonable efforts were made after July of 2015, notwithstanding the fact that she filed a notice of appeal in July of 2015 that basically abrogated whatever effect the JDR court order had of changing the goal. That was as if it had never occurred. And so the goal should have remained we need to continue providing reasonable services, trying to correct the situation until this hearing in circuit court occurs in March of 2016. But their testimony is we have no evidence of anything being done after July of 2015. Jamie Lamont's here, but I don't have no idea what she did, and for some reason she wasn't called to the stand. The only thing Ms. Bowie was able to testify to after July of 2015 was they let her see her kids once a week through Together to Last Change. That's it. That's not clear and convincing evidence that reasonable efforts were made by the various social agencies to try to assist Ms. Gregory in correcting the situation. It's a fairly straightforward argument, and I'll attempt to, rest on the remain of my time, and I will attempt to look up the question that the court
Thank
had.
You.
Ms. Price.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Kim Carley here for the City of Hampton. May it please the Court, the situation presented in appellant's, or the arguments presented in the appellant's briefs obviously are subject to a very heightened standard of review by this court, and it's the city's position that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in approving the goal of adoption or terminating parental rights. The appellant's primary challenge was whether or not the department made reasonable efforts between this period of July 2015 to February of 2016, or March 2016 when the hearing happened, but really it's irrelevant because the children came into care in April of 2014, and the statutes really only require the department to provide reasonable efforts for a period of 12 months. It's in the statute. It's also a rule cited in the case of Akers versus Fauquier County, which is cited in brief. If the parents are not able to remedy their situation within the 12 months, given the reasonable efforts of the department, then the statutes allow for the rights to be terminated if it's
that
in the children's.
That presupposes that reasonable efforts have been made.
I'm sorry, Your Honor.
That 12-month period presupposes that reasonable efforts have been made.
That is correct, Your Honor. And in this case, I think there was plentiful evidence in the record that reasonable efforts had been made during that period of April 2014 up until July of 2015. And the appellant is not challenging that in brief or, as Your Honor pointed out, really didn't even make that argument in the trial court. So I think we can assume, based upon the evidence and the findings and the fact that it's not being challenged, that reasonable efforts were made during the original 12-month, even actually 14-month period leading up to the initial hearing in the juvenile court where the rights were initially terminated. And yes, while an appeal does necessarily stay the effect of the agency to really carry on with any form of adoption or anything of that nature, the foster care proceeding is still proceeding in juvenile court waiting on the outcome of the appeal. So there's no inherent need for the department to continue to actively engage with reasonable efforts to reunify during that period of appeal. But even given that, even so in this case, the department did still provide some efforts. There was not substantial testimony about what was done after July of 2015, but there was ongoing visitation. There was a reunification worker assigned to the case that had been testified to. And the referrals that had previously been made to the parents for substance abuse and mental health counseling, all of those referrals still stay in place. They don't go away. It's just the department is no longer actively assisting the parents in carrying out those referrals. So I think that even if the court was going to say the department had to continue to provide reasonable efforts to reunify, there is sufficient evidence for the trial court to have made that finding in this case and in this record. The bottom line of this case is that the parents were not able to remedy the situations that brought the children into care within the 12-month period mandated by statute. And really, they weren't even able to do it when they had an additional 8 months between the time of the July 2015 hearing and the March 2016 hearing. The situation hadn't even really changed for the parents in that period of time. There continued to be ongoing issues with substance abuse and mental health and homelessness and also just general parenting skills. And these are really, you know, systemic and foundational issues that don't go away easily. They take many years even to really truly remedy those kinds of issues, and the case law and the statutes make it clear that the children do not have to linger in the system while the parents take all the time that they need to get it together. They really have that 12 months. That 12 months had run by the time July 2015 had come and gone. And these particular children, they had some special needs, and taking them and their considerations in their and the fact that they had made such substantial gains in the foster home, certainly there's sufficient evidence for the trial court to have made the finding that it was in the children's best interests, and also that the department did utilize reasonable efforts. So if there are any questions, I'd be happy to.
Thank you very much. Right. Mr. Hayden?
Your Honor, with regard to the issue of preservation of the issue of termination of parental rights, I've cited on the brief the argument that was made by Mr. Walter, Ms. Gregory's trial counsel at 209 through 211. I quoted that, and in the course of that argument, he's citing the positive things that she had accomplished.
I'm sorry, where are we now?
209 through 211. And he cites the various things that, you know, she was universally acknowledged to be cooperative with the social services and was very had a good attitude as far as trying to.
I need you to tell me is your assignment of error one has to do with the error in approving the foster care. So my question is whether that issue was raised below, and then the assignment of error two was reasonable efforts. And so what I need you to do is to tell me specifically where in those numerous citations that issue, those two issues were preserved.
Well, at page 210, he says, Mr. Walter says, my client's position, Judge, is adamant.
Tell me what line, please.
The line 22. My client's position, Judge, is adamant that she did the best she could within the parameters that the law provides, knowing that she had some limitations.
All right, and where from that can you tell me that she preserved the foster care issue?
She in the...
Or preserve the reasonable efforts by the agency.
Well, she certainly said that she deems that that would be in their best interest rather than a termination of parental rights, not to terminate parental rights.
Well, my question is, where did you put the trial court on notice, not you, the trial counsel, that those two issues were contested?
Well, there is also...
I won't spend all day on this. I need you to tell me specifically where those words were
yes,
argued.
Yes, I note that on page 232 of and 234 of also 236, there is the handwritten notation of Mr. Walter, the mother's counsel, saying seen and objected to for the reasons stated in the record that
right, and you would agree with me that that doesn't preserve anything unless it's stated in the record.
Right. And
so I'm going back to show me in the record where she argued foster care or reasonable efforts.
I think it was pointed out by Mr. Walter. Haven't found it yet, but I believe that it was pointed out, certainly was highlighted in the cross-examinations, that there was no there were no services provided by the...
Does that preserve it?
Not necessarily, but I would certainly...
Well, I tell you what, instead of taking up another hour of this court's time, if the other panel members are agreeable, you send a letter to the court.
I will do that.
Specifying where in any of those pages do you preserve foster care plan and reasonable efforts.
I will do that.
And I'd like you to do that, what's the day? Wednesday? By next Monday or Tuesday? By next Tuesday, with a copy to the social services. Because I must tell you, Mr. Hayden, I looked, I didn't find any of it, so I'm real curious as to what you could find.
Yes, sir. Were objection made to reasonable efforts or lack of provision of services?
One, assignment of error number one, the trial court erred in approving the foster care plan, and assignment of error two had to do with reasonable efforts. Now, I don't have a problem with what's in the best interest of the child, because I think that's clearly preserved. But those other two things give me a lot of concern.
And the with regard to the foster care plan, that change of goal was not in the best interest. It's objected that there is a change of goal from return to parent to
that's
adoption.
That's assignment of error one. Right. Send your response to the clerk's office, and they will send it to the panel.
Send by that next Tuesday is... And to DSS. To counsel
copy,
for DSS.
Copy social services when you send the response to the clerk's office.
Yes, sir. Or to the counsel for DSS, city attorney,
mm-hmm.
or rather than directly to
counsel.
Social.
Counsel, sure. I'm sorry.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll come down and greet counsel.